Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Final hour of the program. Tyler Zuli's producing as we hang out together until midnight. Want to outfit yourself in some cool Fanatic and Philly sports swag? Lots of Fanatic and Philly sports team themed merch at great prices. From hoodies to long sleeve tees, mugs, caps, phone cases, tanks, and a lot more. The Fanatic Pro Shop has something for everyone, including our lady listeners, with unique Fanatic and Philly designs. Go to 975thefanatic.com and check out the Fanatic Pro Shop. Open now. Flyers have you excited yet? They have me excited. I've got to tell you the truth. Like, you look at the Metropolitan Division. The Metropolitan Division's really good. A lot of people look at that as a reason to feel like, whatever, it's team, blah, blah, blah. Columbus and Philadelphia are tied up at 71 points, right? Pittsburgh, Washington, Islanders currently holding the playoff spots in the Metropolitan Division. As far as I'm concerned, people look at it as a detriment that the Metropolitan Division's so good. I haven't really been looking at it that way. The way that I've been absorbing it is that this is the group that the Flyers have to survive in order to make the playoffs. And they've got a lot of Metro games still ahead on the schedule as we head down the stretch. They got, whatever, 23 games or something like that left. 24 games. So close. That being said, if they make the playoffs, first of all, you've hung with the best teams in the Eastern Conference, largely, with all due respect to what Boston and Tampa have been able to put together. But pound for pound, you're looking at the division. The Metro has been really, really good. Flyers get to the postseason, they're going to be ready to go, period. And right now, it looks decent. Lots of things can change, but there are currently 4 points between the Flyers and the Carolina Panthers, who are, at 67 points behind the Flyers for that second wild card spot. The Carolina Hurricanes, do have two more games in hand on the Flyers, so they have an opportunity to make it up. But as far as I'm concerned, the Flyers should feel really good about their ability to perform once they make the postseason. Saves the Day tweets in, loving the Flyers team this year. I think we can make a run. Big smiley face emoji. I'm just saying, matchups do matter, and if the Flyers are playing hot by the end of the year, who knows? They're going to be in pretty good shape, and like I said, they'll have run through the Metropolitan Division gauntlet. Shouldn't be afraid of anybody. Sean in the Northeast is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Sean?
Hey, what's up, Joe? Great show, as always.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
No problem. So I've been watching a lot of Villanova basketball. I'm a huge Sixers guy. Mm-hmm. And every night I watch Villanova, they compete as a team every single night to win. So my concern with the Sixers, obviously the Clippers game was great. They were competing as a team. It wasn't like a game where they hit a bunch of threes and they really competed defensively, offensively as a team, moving the ball. How can they turn that switch on and off? Do you think that's a Brett Brown thing? And if it is, should we be concerned? Like in the playoffs, or is it going to be on? Is it going to be off?
Well, so I'm not trying to make excuses for the Sixers, Sean, right? But I think if you are a coach, you have a lot easier buy-in getting these guys to give you everything for 30 games as opposed to like 82 games. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that makes it's a big difference. You see people hitting the rookie wall and stuff right around the 50-game mark. It's because they've never played that many games.
Yeah, no, I know it's a long NBA season, but I was watching Villanova the other night, and they won by 1 point, but it's just, they always come to play. I know it's college, it's different. They just always come to play, and I'm like, is it a Brett Brown thing? I like can't put my finger on it.
I think it partly is. It's definitely partly a Brett Brown thing, but I think that part of it, too, is that you've got Joel Embiid with the load management situation, and you've got everything that has kind of gone with Joel Embiid, with him being moody and not necessarily in it every single time. At the NBA level, I would think, Sean, that these guys are pros. It's kind of on yourself, whether you have it in you or not, to be locked in all the time.
And I don't watch every other game for other teams, so I can't tell, you know what I mean?
Yeah, everybody lays eggs, yeah.
Yeah, of course, I know that. What do you think about, I know Deion Waiters, he has like a lot of stuff going on, a lot of baggage, but you can't deny, I mean, he's a flat out scorer. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, he's definitely a bucket. I mean, that's for sure. And obviously, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. The local ties, super interesting. There have been ties to the Los Angeles Lakers. They're looking into him right now. J.R. Smith is another one. They're looking at kind of like the same kind of guys. As far as I'm concerned, if they do their due diligence, if Elton Brand feels good about Deion Waiters, then I would too. It's not one where, like, for example, the Al Horford signing, I really didn't care what Elton Brand thought about Al Horford. I was not a big fan of this. But with Deion Waiters, the fit is such that, like, hey, if you bring in a guy, whether it's off the bench or whatever, for scoring, and he's able to deliver that and everything else checks out with him, I'd be open to that. I don't think the Sixers are good enough now where you can neglect or turn your nose up at adding talent anywhere. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. Top of Board the Conversation. Michael Pittman Jr. is the other, the USC wide receiver. 6'4", 223. Another Pac-12 guy. You know, ranked right around like 60 by Draft Tech. You know, but the Eagles
still
see something
at 23.
Yeah, Eagles just see something in them, you know? Terry in Washington Township's next on The Fanatic. What's up, Terry?
How you doing, guys? Great show.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I called on the way home here in reference to the Phils.
Okay.
I honestly could see us being closer to the 10th best team in the National League very easily. We got holes all over the place. Center field, third base. I like the addition of Zach Wheeler, but I'll be honest with you. I mean, he's a number three, in my opinion, until he proves otherwise.
Mm.
You know, Nola, I love. He's our guy. But he's shown spurts where you could see him being the ace of a ball club, and then he looks like a number two on a very good team at times.
Sure.
And in our division alone, I mean, if the Mets offense can stay healthy, keep players on the field, that's a scary team with that pitching staff, with that Pete Alonso and kids like that.
Sure.
You know, the Confortos and stuff. So I could see us being the fourth best in our division alone, let alone the rest of the National League.
Well, so the frustrating part for me, Terry, is that like when the Zach Wheeler signing happened, it was so early that we kind of all thought that there was going to be a lot more that was coming in the offseason, but it seemed like
correct.
The Phillies were like, hey, we did a thing, you know, now we're going to sit back on our laurels and not do much.
Right,
Didi.
Right.
That's it.
Kind of what the Flyers used to do back in the day, too, is they'd go get that, you know, that Paul Coffey type player that's, you know, been there, done that, really doesn't have much left, but he's a name that they bring to the team to kind of shut the fans up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, look, we did something. Yeah.
Yes, correct. And as for all of our teams, it's such a weird place to be as a Philadelphia fan, because I feel like some of our teams here, whether it be the Sixers or the Eagles, it wouldn't surprise me if they were division winners, but then it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't make the playoffs at all. Like, it's weird if you follow what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of promise for all four of our hometown teams. But there's also a lot of room for a lot of disappointment, too. So it could go either way, I feel like, for us right now, you know, on all four, you know, aspects of sports, you know, in the city.
So which way do you choose to look at it, Ter? Because I'll tell you.
I'm an optimist. I like to think that we're going to wrap things up with each of our teams. I think the Sixers, you know, will find a way and come together. The Flyers are young and hopeful, you know, so, that, you know, they're looking like they're trending in the right direction. The Eagles, did we just get that one wide receiver? You know what I mean? There's a lot of ifs, but I like to be a glass half full instead of empty type of personality. You know what I mean?
Well, Tara, I wish I could be more like you, man. Thanks for the phone call, because the optimism in sports, you know, that's Doc Emmerich had one of the all-time quotes when he came to speak to me in college, not just to me personally, but to my sports broadcasting group. Doc Emmerich is a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. And he said, I always like to go to see a game like in April, before, you know, while they've still got a chance. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was the approach. But the optimism of, like, hey, in spring training, everybody's right there. Everybody's got a chance. Everybody, you know, anything could happen. I've just been stung. I've just been stung by all of these teams.
Wrong.
What do you mean?
So wrong.
What?
Everybody's got a chance.
Yeah.
Really? Like the Tigers don't have a chance.
I can't get
the
there.
Orioles don't have a chance. Could you imagine being an Orioles fan right now? Like, I know the tides are starting to turn, but it's back-to-back 100 loss seasons.
Yeah.
They'll probably be in the high 90s this year.
Yeah, the wrong side of the high 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, Tim Hess isn't really doing it for me.
Yeah, I know. Like, but I guess, like, from a standings perspective.
Yeah, I guess you can't be that far out.
You're like, hey, we're only like 4 games out. Like, and then all of a sudden, you know, the calendar flips over and, you know, reality
starts. Well, then you get that team every year. It's in every league. It's not just in Major League Baseball. It's just a little more exaggerated in Major League Baseball because it's the first 10 of 162 where they're like 9-1.
Right.
And you're like, what is going on? Why are the Detroit Tigers 9-1?
And that's like, you know, 12% of their win total
for the season.
For the whole season, exactly. You know, when I look at it, I'm thinking, you know, I've been hurt by the Sixers this year, been hurt by the Eagles twice in the last 2 years, hurt by the Phillies last year, and I've been hurt by the Flyers before, too. Now, recently, got to admit, Flyers have not been the team that's like pumped up the expectations and then under-delivered. But there's been plenty of that going around in the city for me to not, you know, get too high to begin the season. I really, really like the Bryce Harper signing. I didn't care what it cost. I just said, you know, if you're making a commitment to be better. Here's the thing. It's not necessarily about Bryce Harper. I thought the page had turned on the Phillies not spending like a big market team. I thought it was like, you know, the door opening to, all right, like it's time for the Phillies to join the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the teams that just throw money all over the place to try to get the players that they want. Turns out, not so fast, my friend. There are still some of those small market tendencies that exist here in Philadelphia. Not a big fan. And so now, I'm concerned that the Phillies are kind of stuck in limbo a little bit. Are they going to, like, forever be pursuing the Zach Wheelers of the world forever? Remember, it wasn't long ago. A couple of years ago, you could determine who the teams were that were legit in terms of their pursuit of a championship, whether they were in on David Price or not. You know what I mean? That wasn't that long ago that that was happening. You know, after Bryce Harper, are the Phillies ever going to be in on, you know, another top-level talent like that? I don't know. I'm concerned that I know too much. I'm concerned that I've seen too much and that I've been hurt before on heightened expectations. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. The Onion is always a top-level listen and follow on Twitter. So, you know, I was listening to Tyler and we were talking about Valentine's Day. And this is from The Onion. Girlfriend just wants to have low-key, laid-back Valentine's Day fight this year. I mean, I think that that's a heartwarming story that we could all get behind. You know, nothing
that's
fancy.
That's a violation.
Nothing fancy. Just what? What's the violation?
The low-key fight.
Yeah, yeah. Just like laid back. No, nothing crazy. You know, you don't need to go out to a fancy dinner to have this throwdown. You know, just do it at home. It's fine.
So you can order pizza and still have the same fight.
Just have the same fight.
It's saving you money. I mean, this is conscientious right there.
It's top-level stuff by The Onion. Very good. Lance in Arizona is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Lance.
Hey, yeah, I'm with you. Like, every time you expect them to do really good, they wind up disappointing you. Like, lately, that's been the thing. Like, we went into last year's Philly season thinking they could be a playoff team. They came out the first 2 months and looked good, and then after that, fell flat. Same with the Sixers, man. Like, we thought they were going to be an NBA Finals team. They could beat the Bucks. They're not anything close. Like, until they start winning road games, I can't trust them.
Right.
And then the Eagles consistently keep getting injured, so I can't trust them to do anything either. And, like, the Flyers, I had the lowest expectations for. I thought they'd be at least 2 years away from being, you know, at least like a good playoff team that's like competing with the Capitals in a playoff series, and they might be closer than what I thought. So,
isn't that amazing? Like how you think about it, you're like, ah, well, the Flyers, you know, we're going to be patient with them, and then they come screaming up in the rearview mirror. It's like, what's happening here?
Well, see, with the Eagles, they give you hope because they have Carson Wentz, and if Carson Wentz can play like he did down the stretch, if you just add the right pieces, like you would think, man, they're right there because they arguably in the NFC, who has a better young quarterback in the NFC? Like when you
right.
look through it, there really isn't. AFC does.
Yeah, all the top. Yeah, exactly.
But the NFC doesn't. So like then I look at like this offseason and I say to myself, if the Eagles could just manage to somehow get Byron Jones in here because they need a corner, and they managed to actually sign a wide receiver and draft one relatively early, you're telling me that wouldn't drastically improve a 9-7 team, the 9-7 team to like 11-5 or 12-4 just based off that alone? And that's if other guys, they don't have nearly as many injuries. Like, I think about that and I'm like, they just need luck. Like, luck. The last 3 years, they've had so many injuries. If they just get lucky and guys stay healthy somehow, and there's no reason why they couldn't be that.
But let me ask you about this, Lance, because I agree with you in terms of like that outlook. But I think that the biggest adjustment to expectations that I had to make was that a couple of years ago, Doug Peterson came out and talked about being the new norm and they beat the Patriots, stuff like that. And the expectation was that they were going to become the NFC Patriots. And I think that expectation has kind of shifted to all of the teams that have franchise quarterbacks in the NFC. Like, there are probably six teams that have a shot or five teams that have a shot at being the representative from the NFC. And for all of those teams, it's just a matter of luck or a break here or a break there or a right signing here or there. Is that fair?
I mean, I think it's fair, but I think there's some teams that are closer to the end. Like, I think Green Bay is closer to the end than they are to being a title contender. I think they were 13-3 this year, but if you look at how they played this year, they could have lost. There were a lot of close games where they could have lost. Like, I look at the Eagles this way. You're the only one I could say in the NFC besides Dallas that they re-signed Dak that has a really young quarterback. Like, Russell Wilson's 30, so he's somewhat still young, so you still have them. But, like, I don't think – I live out in Arizona. I watch Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray is good. I don't think he's ever going to be elite, and they play in a tough division, so you have that going against you. You play in a weaker division. Like, to me, the bigger problem with the Eagles is they keep signing these guys that are either pretend old and they get injured, or they're just guys who can't stay healthy. Like, Ronald Darby, don't bring him back. Last year, you couldn't stay healthy the first 2 years here, and you brought him back, and then you're relying on him.
Right.
Jones, can't stay healthy. Don't rely on these guys. You have to, like, to me, I wanted to bring this up because the Eagles in free agency, if they somehow get Robbie Anderson, they somehow get Byron Jones, and they just go into the draft with those of their two major signings and then a couple smaller signings, to me, that improves your team so much that, who are you going to say if that happens, they get those two guys hypothetically better than them going into the draft in the NFC? Because you look at the Niners, they're going to lose some guys on that defense. Their guys are free agent. Armstead's going. You look at Seattle, they're going to lose Clowney.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers is another year older. You look at the Saints, like Drew Brees is coming closer to the end. Like, Minnesota's going to lose a couple guys. Like, the Eagles, really, the guys that they're going to lose off this team, they're not really guys. Like, maybe McLeod is the only one I'd be like, man, they really need to replace him.
Right.
The guys that are free agency. So,
unless, and Lance, thanks for the phone call. Unless Malcolm Jenkins is telling the truth, and Malcolm Jenkins is not going to show up with his new deal. And by the way, the Eagles are not going to give, I would be shocked if they gave him any kind of deal mirroring what top safeties in the league are making right now.
No chance.
Right?
I mean, they need to restructure. I do truly believe that to keep the guy here, but there's no way that he gets $15 million.
I mean, that's what they're going for now, right? It's like, I don't know. Now, I do like those two moves. If you were able to get Robbie Anderson and Byron Jones, I think you shore things up here. So let's take a look. There are, you might not like them, but there are quarterbacks that I anticipate taking steps forward. How big or small, you know, remains to be seen. Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins in division, right? Dak Prescott, if he stays in division. So those are three younger quarterbacks in the NFC, and that's just in the division. Also, I'm not saying this, that Washington or New York would take another quarterback. They just took quarterbacks last year, but they're both in the top four. They could largely have their choice of any of the next quarterbacks if they decided that that was the way that they wanted to go after Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati, right? Detroit's at three. You're telling me Detroit's not thinking about taking a young quarterback? Now, the reports came out today and then were swiftly denied by Lions ownership that Matthew Stafford could be on the trade block. Carolina Panthers. Now, people talk about them bringing back Cam Newton. I don't see it. They're going to release Cam Newton. People are talking about him trading Cam. They're going to cut him. So that's a team that potentially could be drafting a quarterback. So there's a lot of teams in the NFC that all of a sudden, depending on how good Justin Herbert is or Tua Tagovailoa or any of these guys, right? Like, there are a ton of teams that if the draft board ends up going the right way are going to end up with young quarterbacks. How good are they? We'll see. But it's kind of coming. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Chuck, we're going to lead off with you on the other side. I want to make sure you don't get cut off by this commercial break. It is the Joe Torty Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torty on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torty Show, 97.5, The Fanatic, closing in on midnight. Tyler Zuli producing the program. As usual, we get the tweet that comes in. Nate from the 8. Lance is on the money with that call, as per usual. All right, so here we go. Serious question. This is from Dennis from Bensalem. Maybe it's because I don't understand the difference between catch percentage and drop passes, but why would we want a wide receiver with a career 54.2 catch percentage when we all hate a guy with 59.9 percentage? Because he's half a second faster? Well, if I assume, and Dennis, I'm sorry if I don't know this for sure, I assume that you're talking about the difference between Robbie Anderson and Nelson Agholor there. I assume that's what we're going with. Nelson Agholor is reasonably fast, so if Robbie Anderson's half a second faster than Nelson Agholor, sign me up twice for that guy. Here's why. Robbie Anderson's catching passes from Jets quarterbacks, and Nelson Agholor has had Carson Wentz, Nick Foles, etc. to be catching passes from. Also, as I laid out, and I am not saying this to troll the fan base. I am saying this sincerely. I believe that a Doug Peterson offense requires a fast guy on the outside. Not that that fast guy is actually any good. I do think that it is necessary to have a speed burner out there. That's why, actually, I was not a big fan of the DeSean Jackson trade last year, because I was like, you're going to overpay for him because he's DeSean Jackson, when I think that if you just get a straight line speed guy, you could, you know, totally do some damage. The one that I had pegged was John Brown, who ended up, like, being the big guy for Buffalo. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's comparable, because he got a big deal too. But I think that there were other guys out there besides DeSean that could do DeSean stuff and didn't have the injury history that DeSean did.
Well, and it's funny you say that too, because I look at it and I'm not necessarily in total agreement with you that they need a burner. You need a burner just to have a burner. I'm a believer in you need to have some kind of talent to back it up. But then on the flip side, I go to the NBA and I go, you got to have a three-point shooter. Just to have a three-point shooter. It doesn't have to be good at anything else. Just got to shoot threes.
Right.
And I don't know why my brain has some kind of disconnect between the two. Maybe it's because we watched J.J. Redick be that player for 2 years.
Could be.
But you have to have it.
Well, let me try this with you, right? If you don't have one, and you've got Nelson Agholor, and you've got Alshon Jeffrey, and you've got Dallas Goedert, and you've got Zach Ertz as your top receiving weapons. All of those guys occupy the same spot. It's the same issues that we have if you don't have a three-point shooter, right? It's Al Horford and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid all competing for the same airspace. That's why I think so. I think that just from a balance perspective, and from the way that the team's been built, by the way, dating back to when Doug Peterson took over this team, they've always had to have somebody. Now, in the 2 years that they had a speed burner who got hurt, Mike Wallace and DeSean Jackson, the offense was utterly unimpressive to watch. in the year that Torrey Smith is there, Torrey Smith, he of no great talent, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of being an elite game-breaking wide receiver. He's not Julio Jones or Odell Beckham Jr. or any of these guys, right? The offense flourishes. Your top guys have space to work. In the event that Torrey Smith blows by somebody, you have the opportunity to get him a ball, pass interference, long catch, whatever. I just think it works. I just think the whole thing works with this offense. The Patriots don't need that. Patriots have tried it. And it's worked sometimes with Randy Moss. Has not worked some other times with Brandon Cooks, right? Like you,
Philip Dorsett,
right. You've seen it work and not work. I think that this offense, you've only seen it now, smaller sample size, because New England, you've got Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and a long, long, like 20 years of watching these guys. But with the Eagles, small sample size, all that you've seen is that they thrive when there is a deep threat and they struggle when there is not a deep threat. That's why I think that it's anyone. I think anyone would work. Chuck in Las Vegas is next on the Fanatic. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, guys. Hey, how's it going out there on the East Coast?
We're hanging in there, Chuck. Thank you, man.
Yeah, I just wanted to first give a quick nod to the Philadelphia Flyers, man. That this team's playing extremely well. You know, I'm used to, you know, Flyers teams that are good, they usually score a lot of goals, and they don't always play the best defense. And this just seems like a much more defensive minded team.
Agreed.
And, you know, and it's just really refreshing to watch.
Well, that's Elaine Vigneault, man, Chuck. If you watch any of his teams, yeah, they'll score a little bit, but they are absolutely going to defend. There's no doubt.
Exactly. We have everyone, including our forwards, our goal-scoring forwards, everyone's defensively minded right now.
Yep, for sure.
And just a quick shout-out to Sean Couturier. The guy's playing great hockey and may very well be our best player right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's been true for a couple of years, I think, Chuck. I think you're right on the money.
Yeah, and just switching gears to the Phillies, man. I can't get excited for this season at all. I honestly, I don't want to get excited. I'm really disappointed in our general manager, Matt Klentak. It certainly sounds like we're going to be throwing out guys like Eflin and Pivetta. Is that correct in our starting rotation?
It seems that way. It does seem that way. Now, they like what they saw from Eflin at the end of last season, I saw them saying, so who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I just can't get behind any of those guys. And it's just really disappointing that we still have Gene Segura on this team. The guy couldn't even run to first base, and he seems like a complete cancer in the locker room. I'm really appalled that he's still on the roster. And so I don't know. I like Girardi. You know, I'll try to muster up some enthusiasm, but it's going to be tough, man.
Chuck, I hear you, man. Thanks for the phone call. And that is kind of the lens through which I think a lot of people are viewing this Phillies season, where, man, you talk about a guy who took literally no time to wear out his welcome. Gene Segura is that guy. A month into the season, everybody's like, literally, I can't believe that we traded for this guy. This is the greatest trade in the history of baseball. And less than a calendar year later, people are like, I am so done with Gene Segura. Either one of those overreactions, Tyler?
I'm not usually an overreaction guy.
Yeah.
I went from 100 to negative 100.
Really?
In the span of about 4 weeks.
What was it? What was it about his game that turned you off?
It wasn't, and I'm going to preface this right away, it wasn't the McCutcheon injury. Those things happen. It is what appears to be, in my opinion, the lack of hustle.
Uh-huh.
What appears to be, in my opinion, a lack of second-level baseball IQ.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to insult the guy's character, but I don't think that he is a good fit on a team in most instances, and they start to realize why he's been on 5 teams in 6 years.
Yeah, when you watch the way that he defends and the way that he hits, you're like, how in the world could this guy be on all these teams? And we started to get some answers to that. You do bring up the McCutcheon injury. I don't fault Segura for that either.
No.
But there is no doubt now. And it sounded ridiculous when we said it before. We were like, surely this team is not losing because of the Andrew McCutcheon injury. I've changed my mind. I know the pitching's been bad. Like, it was bad last season. I think that they did lose because of the Andrew McCutchen injury.
I think it certainly had trickle-down effect. I mean, because it makes you have to find a new leadoff hitter.
Yep.
And it makes you... And when you have to find a new leadoff hitter, oftentimes, with the exception of maybe the 3-4 spots, you have to find a new 2, a new 5, a new 6. It trickles down. Then, on top of that, you have to play Jay Bruce, a guy you signed to be your power bat off the bench. He's now your everyday left fielder.
Right.
It all just starts to add up and trickle down.
Well, and so that's the thing. That's actually a reason why if you're optimistic about the Phillies this year, I don't blame you, because there was like a 3 or 4 week span where the Phillies were slotted, where they like had everybody where they were supposed to be, and the results offensively were there. And you didn't see Gabe Kapler tinkering with the lineup outside of lefty-righty, but even that was a very minimal impact. You kind of saw a balance there. And then, you know, the one guy or the other guy got hurt, and then McCutchen gets hurt, and the whole season kind of changes. So if everything is back in order, then, you know, hey, maybe things work out. But it is amazing how Gene Segura has worn out his welcome. By the way, I haven't talked to you about this, Tyler, and if I have, forgive me. JT Realmuto headed to arbitration. We're talking about just stupid money.
Pay the man.
$2.4 million.
Pay the man. Come on.
Oh, jeez.
It's the best catcher in baseball.
Look, I get why if you're the Phillies, you don't want to just give in, right? Because in every arbitration-eligible case, you want to have some place to start from, right? Like, you don't want to be the team that is historically just given and given and given and given, because then the arbitrator will look at it through that lens and say, all right, like, you have more to give. You've just given in the past, like that. But man, oh man, 2.4, it's such a stupid hill to die on for somebody who's either your best or your second best player.
And
that's so crazy.
I know he's saying all the right things. I know it's not the Phillies, it's the system, it's not the Phillies, blah, blah, blah. There is no way he truly means that.
How could he?
A consummate professional, but there's no way.
He's like, this is like the equivalent of 3 charter flights in the season. That's like what this is. What are we doing here, people? Dennis and Ben Salem's next on The Fanatic. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, Joe. How you been, brother?
Doing great.
I 100% agree with what Tyler just said. Realmuto is handling this like a pro. I mean, you know, like, the only chance the Phillies stand is, you know what? Hey, we took you to arbitration next year. Oh, that's what you want? Okay, we're going to give you an extra $10 million. Like,
make up for it.
Yeah, like, they have to be having conversations back behind closed doors. Like, look, we got to do what we got to do. We're going to take care of you in the long run. Because, like you said, he's our best, second best. One or two on the team.
Either
that's
way.
Horrible. As for our Twitter conversation.
But, yes. Yeah,
it's not that I dislike Robbie Anderson. I see Nelson Aguilar all over again. I really do. I'm worried. At least Nelson had one really good year for us, and that was the Super Bowl season.
Yes.
But look how quick. The second he went back to year one Nelson, we just couldn't wait to kill him. I'm worried that's what's going to happen with Robbie Anderson.
Well, so the only reason, Dennis, that I would say that those two guys are different there is because you mentioned that Nelson Aguilar had one good season when he was catching passes from an MVP candidate, as opposed to Robbie Anderson, who's put up pretty productive numbers with, like, the mishmash of Jets dreck that they've had during his tenure there, you know?
Yeah, and like I said, maybe I just don't understand the difference between catch percentage and drop passes, but a catch percentage means you could have caught the ball and you didn't.
I believe so. Unless it's like target percentage or ratio. I've got to look into the specific stats there.
Yeah, I equate that to, you know, it's drop passes, and it's just as bad, if not worse, than Aguilar's. But who knows? But I understand what you're saying, like with Torrey Smith that Super Bowl year. This could be Torrey 2.0. You have him streaking down the sideline. Defenders are like, oh, crap, can't crash the box. Now maybe the run game does well.
Yeah.
I'm more of run the ball to get the defenders up in the box, and now the fast wide receiver just blows right by them.
Dennis, by the way, I did just look this up, because you're right. I mean, I think that that's what Robbie Anderson could be. Catch percentage is just receptions divided by targets. So that,
okay, so maybe he does catch the ball a little better than Aguilar. Okay, so
yeah, I got to go look up his drop percentage relative. But yeah, I mean, I think that, thanks for the phone call, Dan. Some Jet quarterback, quote unquote, targets are quite different. Let's just put it that way. All right, so since 2018, which I guess is the first year that they started doing this drop percentage stuff on Pro Football Reference, that doesn't sound right. Robbie Anderson had a 2.1 drop percentage in 2018 and a 4.2 drop percentage in 2019. Meanwhile, we'll take a look at our friend Nelson Aguilar in those same metrics. The drop percentage of 3.8 in 2018 and 5.8 in 2019, much higher in the last 2 years. Now, I'd like to see more data historically, but that's just the 2 years is all we have here. But, you know, he's got a drop percentage that's just about double. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. And an interesting tweet about Robbie Anderson's just come in. I want to get to it next. Also, walk around the show, figure out where we've been, where we're going. One more thing. And Tyler Zuli's final thoughts, obviously, as well, right here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.